You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Last week we started talking about this tabernacle, and the tabernacle was something that we find in the end of the book of Exodus. And again, I don't have time to review, but if you weren't here last week, you can go online, mc3church.org, click on Listen to the Point, and it's called Dwell is the name of the series, and you can download. Last week was called The Place of Presence, as we were talking about where God's presence dwelled. And that's what the tabernacle was, is that God said to Moses, to the Israelites after they had just come out of Egypt, that I want to dwell with you. I want you to make a place for me so that I can live with you. I never thought about the height thing. So I can have a place where I can live among you. And God had talked to people before and he'd been a part of connecting with them. But now he was physically dwelling among them. And that was what we talked about last week, was that God's presence meant, welcomed actually was the word we used. God's presence welcomes us to a relationship with him. And that was that whole wow idea that the God of the universe wants to have a relationship with us. And so this week, I want you to get this idea. When it comes to God's presence, this is what I want you to understand. That God's presence reminds us that our sin is costly. God's presence reminds us that our sin is costly. It's not a whoopsie. It's not a minor oops, oh, too bad, bummer. It's costly. When we choose to disobey God, whether intentionally or unintentionally, there is a price to pay. And we just sang a couple songs about that. And so I want you to get this idea that God's presence reminds us that our sin is costly. And we'll kind of keep coming back to that. But let's review a little bit of your chart. If you had your prime group this week, if you went to your prime group, you saw this on your take-home sheet. But I want to review the whole thing, and you're going to help me. Obviously, around this, this is what the tabernacle kind of looked like, at least from above. That being west, that being north, south, and no. That being east, that being north and south, and that's west. Yeah, that's the way west is, right? If north is that way? Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so walk with me through. The outside, there was a big fence, and I should have clarified that last week. I did not. The outside ring was a fence. It was about 7-something feet tall. It was a fence. And so at the front, we had a thing called the gate. Yeah, at the front was the gate. So the gate is there. So that's where the gate was. So if people wanted to come into the tabernacle, they had to go to the gate. So there was where the gate was. So that was really pathetic. So as we move on, you can certainly speak out and go there. So as you were to move in this bigger area here to the right, kind of which is just inside of the gate, it's a very common phrase that we use today. But it was this open area was called the courtyard, right? The courtyard by Marriott. You can stay there for free. They have Wi-Fi and the continental breakfast. But the courtyard, that was the kind of this open area that was in there. And then in this courtyard, there were a couple of things. First of all, there was this object, this big square object that's kind of to that side. And that was called the brazen altar. Again, it wasn't because it was some kind of huffy. It was brazen because it was covered in bronze. And so there was a brazen altar. And if you notice, that is in highlighted in a color today because we're going to talk about the altar today. And so then as you move to the west, the next object in the courtyard was the laver. The laver, that was where people washed. And washing was a symbolic thing to show that you had been made clean. And if you were to have a horse trough and go into it and come out of it and say, I have been made clean by Jesus, that would be a really great way to represent that. But anyway, we wouldn't do that. So the laver is where the priest would wash before they would go in. And they would go in then to this other building here. Now this, it had walls, but it also had a roof. And so that's what my diagram doesn't show the roof, because if you saw the roof, you wouldn't be able to see inside of it. And so this is called the what? The tabernacle proper. Right. The tabernacle proper. That's the actual building was called the tabernacle. And then inside that, beginning, where do we start? There were two sections, by the way. There was what was called the holy place, and only the priest could enter the holy place. And then there was an area called the most holy place, and only the high priest could enter the most holy place one day a year, the Day of Atonement. And we'll come to that in just a second. But so over here on the, what's top? Let's see, do I go to the north? Yeah, the north. There's a large rectangular table there. And what is that called? Table of showbread, or the table of bread of presence. And it was a table where there was bread there, and we'll come to that in a couple of weeks. And then on the southern end of that building, there was a thing that had lights on it called a menorah or lampstand. Either one, they're the same word, but the Hanukkah menorah is actually different but similar to the menorah that was in here. But it was a lampstand that had seven candles on it. And then moving to the west even more, there was a smaller altar, and this was the altar of incense. On here, there was incense that was burned, and the smell of it, and we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks, rose up to God and smelled good and it looked good. And then separating the holy place from the most holy place was what? The curtain or the veil. Yeah, there was a very thick veil, and we'll talk about that the last week of this series. As we look at that. So then there was a veil, and that separated the holy place from the most holy place. And then inside the most holy place, or the Holy of Holies, as it's sometimes called, there was what? There was an object that Indiana Jones found, and it's now stored in Area 51. The Ark of the Covenant, right. The Ark of the Covenant is in there. Now, above the Ark of the Covenant was where God's presence dwelled. God dwelled above the Ark of the Covenant, in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And so only the high priest could go in there. And again, we'll talk about it in just a few minutes. One day a year, because that was God's presence. That was where he showed up so that people could see it physically. So that was the altar. And so this week, today, I want to talk to you about the brazen altar in the courtyard there. Of the tabernacle. Here's the passage in Exodus 27, and you don't need to turn there because I'm just kind of setting it up. But Exodus, the second half of Exodus, is the instructions that God gave to Moses for building this tabernacle because he wanted to dwell with them. And this is what he says. He says something that's using acacia wood. Oh, that's what that word is. Construct a square altar 7.5 feet wide and 7.5 feet long and 4.5 feet high. And make horns for it. We don't have horns. For each of its four corners, so that the horns and the altar are all one piece. And overlay the altar with bronze, which we were almost going to do, but we just ran out. I'm sorry. We were going to do that. We had the hammer ready and the steel forge going on, and we just ran out of bronze. I apologize. We'll have to get on that next time. But anyway, then he says, make ash buckets, shovels, basins, meat forks, and fire pans, all of bronze. Make a bronze grating for it and attach four bronze rings at its four corners. Install the grating halfway down the side of the altar, so there was a ledge around the edge, under the ledge for carrying the altar, under the ledge. So there's a grate in here about halfway up, like a grill grate. And then it said, for carrying it, make poles from acacia wood, and that's the acacia tree there, and overlay them with bronze. Insert the poles through the rings on the two sides of the altar. The altar must be hollow, made from planks. Build it as you were shown on the mountain. So God told the people to make an altar, and this is the dimensions of that altar. It was a fairly large thing, and this was a brazen altar. It was covered in bronze, and it was used for cooking the sacrifices that people would bring to the altar. And so last week we talked about how, or to the tabernacle, last week we talked about how God wanted people to connect with him, but in order to do that, he had to make a way for sinful people to be in the presence of a holy God. And so he set up this system of sacrifice. The system where people would bring their animals or their birds or grain, and we'll see that in a second, and so they could then offer that on behalf of their sin. And so he had them bring an altar or build an altar out of bronze. And what we find, actually, it's in Leviticus, are the instructions for what these sacrifices were to look like. So here's the deal: your average Joe Israelite. Joe isn't a very Israelite name, but he was. Your average Joe Israelite, and you messed up. You have sinned. You have done something wrong, and since we all do, you need to basically say, okay, I want to come into God's presence. I want to be made right with God, and so you would have to bring a sacrifice, and you would bring it to the gate. And so I want to talk about what these sacrifices looked like and how it works. So this is the sacrifice of bulls and goats. There were more than just bulls and goats, but for the most part, bulls and goats were what people would use because these were shepherds, they were farmers, they were people that knew the land, that knew how to do that. And so the sacrifice of bulls and goats, I want to tell you a few things about it. First of all, God's presence reminds us that our sin is costly. My bad. So I don't remind you of that. Okay, good. Moving on. We'll talk about that some more. So the sacrifice of bulls and goats. There are a few things we knew about this. First of all, this was bloody. Okay? This was bloody. There was an animal whose life was taken for your sake. For the sake, if you're average Joe Israelite, you would say, okay, I want to be made right with God. I want my relationship to be restored. I want to be able to dwell in His presence as He dwells among us. And so if you sinned, you would bring a sacrifice. And basically, here's what would work for the most part, is you would bring your one-year-old bull, male cow, and you would bring this male cow to the gate, and you would bring it and come inside the gate with that. And it says, the instructions say you were to place your hands on the head of this animal. And while your hands were on the head of this animal, you would slit its throat. And so that it would die right there, and its blood would be poured out. It said that the priest then, their job was to get a bucket or a bowl and collect the blood, because then they would take that blood and sprinkle it around the altar. And sometimes they would actually pour it around the altar. So they've got blood, and they're pouring this now. And now you remember, you're one of millions of Israelites, that anytime you want to connect with God, anytime you want to get right for sin that you did on purpose or unintentionally, you had to offer an animal. And so this is a place that was a bloody place. It probably smelled. It was probably gross. And so what you would do is when your hands were on the head of that animal, God says that sinful people can't dwell in His presence. We can't be in the presence of a holy God. And so something has to die because of our sin. And so your hand is on the head of that animal, and you realize at that moment, and the reason it's there is not to hold the animal in place. It's because this animal is now dying something that I should die. This animal's death is the death that should be mine. This animal is dying in my place because I disobeyed God, because I turned away from Him. And so this was a bloody affair where this animal would die because of your sin. If you were Joe Israelite, that's what they would do. They would bring that animal, that bull, and have it there to be killed. Now, and do I talk about this a little bit later? I will talk about that in a second. So first of all, understand that there is death happening here. And then every Israelite understood that the death of that animal was the death that they should have died. That animal died in their place. The second thing we know about this sacrifice is that it was costly. It was costly. You didn't just bring, like, hey, I know you've got a flock, and a herd. If you have a bunch of cattle, and you didn't just bring, like, pick one that you didn't like anyway, that was kind of messed up, probably that one with the broken leg that couldn't walk right and had that gimpy little eye thing going on, you know, where like eyes shot out one way and the other way. It's like, bring that one. And that's not the way it worked. They had to bring, it had to be 1 year old, so it was just getting into maturity. It had to be a male, and it had to be completely without defect. And so you couldn't bring your leftover. You couldn't bring the one that didn't matter. You had to bring the one that cost most likely the most of your flock. And understand, too, this is today we don't get this as much because we don't live based on our flocks. We live based on cash. We use dollars and cents to communicate value and wealth. But for them, it was flocks. It was herds. And so they were taking probably the best of what they had, and they had to give it up because of their sin. It cost a lot. I actually got in touch with a farmer this week. He would consider himself a breeder, and said that a male bull in today's market is worth a lot more than a female bull, because a male bull that is good, that is without defect, can sire many more cow things, cowlings, baby cows. I also found out, by the way, that a sow is not a female cow. Apparently that's a pig. But anyway, so you would bring a male bull today, if it was a good breed, bred bull, which the rules for the tabernacle said they had to bring their best, it would go for somewhere between, he said, in today's market, somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million for a good bull. So now imagine you've got your $500,000 to $1 million bull, and now God says your sin is costly. You need to bring something. Either you're going to die or something has to die in your place. And if you're going to bring something to die in your place, it better be the best of what you've got. And so these people, when they would bring this bull, they realized, this isn't just like, wow, this is dying in my place. This is costing me something serious. This is costing me majorly. And so the death of this animal was costly. Now, they also had rules, by the way. If you're like, well, what if they weren't herders of cows, cattle herders? You could bring a goat, if that's what you did. Or if you were fairly poor and you didn't have animals that walk, if you had birds, you could use a bird as an option. Or even really very, very poor people could offer grains. But whatever it was, proportionately, it was the most expensive, the best thing that they had. And so they understood right away that their sin was costly. They lost the best. And can you imagine that? Can you imagine walking in here and saying, look, guys, whether you sinned on purpose or accidentally, I need you to drop about $750,000. We can put your check in the bucket. We have no problem covering the mission trip. But, I mean, imagine the amount of money that this is for these people. This is a significant thing. So they understood that it was costly. The third thing about the sacrifice of bulls and goats is that it was continuous. They had to do this over and over and over again, at the very least once a year. But often sacrifices would be brought much more regularly than that. I mean, it could be multiple times in one week if the case warranted. But it was a continuous thing. They had to keep doing this over and over. So just when you're like, oh man, the best bull that I had is gone now. Just when the next one is ready to go, you're like, oh, my sin. So now I need to sacrifice another bull or a goat. And so it happened over and over. And there were basically four different types of offerings. And I'll just give you this just so you know. If you read through Leviticus, there were four different types of offerings. And they were this. First of all, there was the sin offering. And the sin offering was for if you did something on purpose. But like I said before, it was also if you did an unintentional sin. If there was something you didn't do, you didn't mean to do. And I would say we sin a lot. James even says that if you didn't do the good thing you were supposed to do, then that's sin too. So they understood that there were unintentional sins, but there was a sin offering, that something had to die for their sin. There was another type of offering called the trespass or guilt offering. And this was that if you did something to someone else, if I stole on purpose or accidentally, I broke John's wagon, because John's a good Jew and he has a wagon, because I don't know. So I break John's wagon now, and I did it on purpose. It was a bad thing. And so now I have to offer something. I have to come into the tabernacle, into the gate, and offer something there to make up for my sin. And the trespass or guilt offering meant I also needed to do some things for John and make it right. And there are rules in Leviticus about how much I owe him and what I have to do. But that was the second kind of offering. It's not where I offended God as much as I've offended another person. And so there was the trespass or guilt offering. The third kind of offering was a burnt offering. And this is where the altar really came into play. Because the burnt offering, what you would do is you would bring it, and not only would it die in your place for your sin, but the entire thing would be burned on the altar. There were some rules for some of the other offerings where you could take parts of them back home, or the priest would have them. But this was a voluntary offering. It was almost like, you know what, hey, I want to follow God with everything I've got. And so they would bring this bull or this goat or this animal, and they would bring it to the priest. It would be slaughtered, and then the priest would put it on this metal grate, or bronze grate, that's about halfway up, and the entire animal would be burned and consumed, everything about it. And that was the idea of, you know, the way this is totally consumed by fire, I want to be totally consumed by God. And so it was a way of worship. And so that was another, the third kind of offering. And then the fourth kind of offering was a peace or a fellowship offering, it's sometimes called, depending on what version you look into. But this is the idea that you wanted to work something out with a friend. You want to say, hey, you know what? We've just come to an agreement together, or we're really good friends. This guy's a buddy of mine. You would go together and you would offer an animal and then take the parts that were some of the parts that were left over. And I'm just summarizing here. You would take them and actually cook them and have a meal with them. And so, you know, you might bring a cow and say, I'm offering this. And you know, just as a way to say thank you so much to the Snook family for all that they've done. And so I appreciate you guys. So we're going to come together to the tabernacle. We're going to offer this as a worship to God. And then we're going to take some of the food from it and we're going to eat it together in a fellowship meal. And so those are the four types. There was a sin, trespass or guilt offering, burnt offering, and then a peace offering or fellowship offering. And so those are the four offerings. Then there was a thing called the Day of Atonement. And I thought I'd mentioned that before. The Day of Atonement, it was once a year. The high priest would have to offer something on behalf of the entire nation. And so there were three things that he needed to bring with him. And the high priest was the only one. He was appointed by God. And then when he died, it was his son that would be the high priest. And he would bring three things. He would bring a bull and then two goats. And the first thing he had to do was sacrifice the bull for his sin. This bull died in his place just like the sin offering. And so he would sprinkle the blood around, do that whole deal. And then he had to bring two goats. The one goat he would kill and take its blood into the bowl, the bucket, whatever you'd use to collect it. And then he would go in on the Day of Atonement, on Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, and he would go behind the curtain into the holy place. And there were all sorts of rules of him having to be washed and having to change his garments. There were lots of stuff that he had to do before he could even enter in there. But he would take this blood and he would sprinkle it on top of the ark. And that place on top of the ark is called the mercy seat. And the reason was is that the blood of this goat was to cover over, which is another word for atone, was to cover over the sin of the people. And it covered over that. And just the way this animal died, it died on behalf of the people. And so the idea was that God, when he would look down onto the ark where he is dwelling above that, and this is, you know, metaphorical somewhat, obviously God, anyway, he's not only there. We talked about that last week. But he would look down and see that blood and realize, okay, these people's sin are forgiven. And so that was only once a year on the Day of Atonement. So that was goat number one. Bull number one was sacrificed for the high priest. Goat number one was sacrificed for the sin of the people. Goat number two was then taken out, and high priest would lay his hands on it and symbolically say, all the sins of our people are on this goat. And they would lead it out into the wilderness to the far, 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 far edges of the camp and let it go. And the idea was that that goat would wander off carrying their sin. We have a phrase for that, and they had a phrase for it too. It's called a scapegoat. That goat would take the blame, take the punishment, take the sin, and carry it off. And so it's something that's still used today, and you're going to get the experience, by the way. All these things I'm talking about, dwell live. We'll have part of that. So it was continuous. The third thing, let me show you this in Hebrews chapter 10. It says, the old system in Hebrews is in the New Testament talking about Moses and the law. The old system under the law of Moses was only a shadow, a dim preview of the good things to come, not the good things themselves. The sacrifices under that system were repeated again and again, year after year, but they were never able to provide perfect cleansing for those who came to worship. And then he goes on and says, if they could have provided perfect cleansing, the sacrifices would have stopped, for the worshipers would have been purified once for all time, and their feelings of guilt would have disappeared. But instead, those sacrifices actually reminded them of their sins year after year. So this is a continuous thing. The Day of Atonement happened every year. The people would have to offer sacrifices on their own at least once a year, but perhaps more often. But they had to keep doing it. Once wasn't enough. It didn't count that way. So the fourth thing about this idea, it was bloody, it was costly, it was continuous, but also the sacrifice of bulls and goats was insufficient. It wasn't good enough. It wasn't a good substitute because this was a sin of a human and an animal was dying in their place. Imagine for a moment that I had $10 cash, which is a lot to imagine for me. One, because I don't carry cash. But if I had a $10 bill and I'm waving it up here, and it is true deal, $10 bill, and I said, I would like to make a trade with you. Would you please trade me for a $50 bill? They're both paper, they're both square, they're both the same size. You would say, no, because that's not a good substitute. If I said, can we trade, you know, two $5 bills or 10 $1 bills or a whole lot of quarters? You would do it, but a $10 bill for a $20 bill isn't a good substitute. And that's exactly the problem with the bulls and the goats and these sacrifices, that they weren't good enough. They were insufficient. They weren't able to substitute for us completely. And that's what Hebrews 10, chapter 4 says, or sorry, verse 4. The writer says, it is not possible, it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. So you've got this system where these people are doing these sacrifices. It's a bloody system. It's a costly system. It's a continuous system. And it's insufficient. It's not good enough. And this is what God set up because, as we just read in Hebrews, He was setting up for something later. This is just a shadow of the real deal. This is getting ready for something bigger because God's presence reminded them very much that their sin was costly. God's presence reminds us that our sin is costly. So fast forward to the New Testament, God says, you know what? It's not good enough. The blood of bulls and goats isn't going to work. We need something that can really take the place of a human being. And so He sent His Son, Jesus. And so this is some things. I'm going to fly through this just because we're running out of time, and that's entirely my fault. But the sacrifice of Jesus, I want to tell you a few things. First of all, the sacrifice of Jesus, just like the sacrifice of bulls and goats, it was bloody. It was bloody. Jesus was beaten. He was whipped. It wasn't a pretty thing. It was bloody nasty. He had a crown of thorns, and the thorns were probably, you know, a couple inches long. They weren't like little rose thingies. Pushed down onto His head. And like I said, He was beaten raw. He was forced to carry a cross on His raw, bloody back. He was nailed to this cross. And it was not a pleasant thing. It was messy. Isaiah 4 is talking about Jesus, and he says, surely He took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered Him punished by God, stricken by Him and afflicted. So He's saying Jesus is taking our sin. He says, but He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on Him. And by His wounds we are healed. Jesus suffered a bloody, bloody, nasty death for our sin. It was a bloody thing. The second thing is that the sacrifice of Jesus was also costly. It cost God His one and only Son. Your sin, that thing that you did, that you thought, that you said on your way into this building, in the car, cost God His Son's life. It was costly. We see that if you know the story of Jesus on the cross, there's a point where he's laying there, he's hanging there, and he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? At the moment of Jesus' greatest, darkest moment, the Father couldn't even look at Him because He was carrying our sin. Jesus' death was costly. And this is what Romans chapter 5 says. Paul writes, he says, but God demonstrates His own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That God didn't wait for us to be good enough. He said, you guys reject me all the time. You don't care about me. You disobey me. You disregard me. You just straight up diss me. And Jesus said, and God said, you know what? But I'm okay with that. I'm going to send my Son anyway. While we were still sinners, Jesus died for us. He gave His Son for us. I would love to know if any of you would sacrifice your children for me. I would be willing to bet you would not. Then I would love to have you say, okay, you know what? Maybe for Sean. But what about that person that you hate? That hates you? That has done things that you can never forgive and say, I'm going to sacrifice my child for them. That is what God did for us. The death of Jesus Christ was costly. It was huge. God gave His only Son for our sake. The third thing about the sacrifice of Jesus is that unlike the Old Testament bulls and goats, which they had to do continuously, the sacrifice of Jesus had to only be done once. Because now things are different. Now it's not some animal trying to take the place of a human. It's a fully man, fully God taking the place of human beings. Hebrews 10 says this in verse 11 and 12. It says, under the old covenant, again, the rules we were just talking about, the priest stands as a minister. Notice the word stands. And ministers before the altar day after day, offering the same sacrifices again and again, which can never take away sins. We've already talked about this. And the priest, by the way, there were no chairs in the tabernacle. There was nowhere to sit down. They had to stand up and keep doing it. The idea was that they were not finished. That was very intentional. And it says, but our high priest, he's referring to Jesus here, offered himself to God as a single sacrifice for sins, good for all time. Then he sat down in the place of honor at God's right hand. Because Jesus did it once, and it was enough. It was good. He sat down because he was done. He says, look, it is finished. Tetelestai is the Greek word, because he's saying, this is it, I am done. I have saved you from your sins. Jesus' death was costly. It was bloody. It was only done once. And the fourth thing about it was that it was complete. Jesus was the perfect substitute for us. He took our place. He was fully God and fully human. He was able to take our place on the cross. Hebrews 10:10 says this, and this is the verse your kids are learning this week. We have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. It's finished. It's done. Jesus died on the cross for you, for me, for my sin, for your sin. The blood of bulls and goats wasn't enough. That constant thing, you know what? I'm changing the rules. That was the hint to show people how sinful we are, how messed up we are, how we always fail God. And Jesus says, now I'm just going to show you the full extent of my love. I'm going to die for you. So God's presence for the people here in the tabernacle and for us today reminds us that our sin is costly. It cost Jesus his life. Do you get that? It wasn't a bummer. It was a horrendous thing. The Jewish people got that. Do we get that? Do we understand that our sin is costly? Do we get that? The Bible says that it was blood that was spilled, that was poured out. And blood is what was used as a symbol of getting rid of sin, because something had to die in order to shed blood. And it was also a symbol of something that could be covered over with blood. And so blood was a way that sin was forgiven, because it was either the death of an animal, of a bull, a goat, or it was the death of a human, fully man, fully God in Jesus. So watch this video about blood. Under your seats, you will find a red piece of paper. Without blood, there is no forgiveness of sins. Jesus' blood was spilled for you. God's presence reminded the Israelites that our sin was costly. So what I'd like you to do is, while the band sings this last song, and it's an incredible song about this exchange between Jesus' life, his death for us. He took our place. And so what I'd like you to do is, there's two ways you could look at this. One, maybe you've never even taken the step to follow Jesus, to trust that his death was good enough for your sin. Because something has to die for your sin. If Jesus isn't the one that you accept, it's going to be you. And so maybe you need to use this card and write your name on it. You don't have to write your whole name. And we're not using it for anything, but you might need to write your name on it to say that Jesus' blood has taken away all of my sin, and that now I'm forgiven because I've made that decision to follow him. But maybe you've already made that decision. You're a Christ follower and you mess up all the time. I do. And sometimes there's just some things that catch us up that we just keep going back to it. And perhaps you've even gotten to the point where that's not that big of a deal. Everybody else is doing it. Does it really matter? Well, God forgave it, right? If there's something that's tripping you up, I would like for you to write that down on this piece of paper. Because that mistake, that oops, that everybody else is doing it, cost the Son of God His life for you. His blood was spilled out for you. And so what I'd like you to do is either writing your name or that sin on there. You can use code if you're around people and you don't want other people to see what's there. But while they're playing this, in a spirit of worship and an attitude of just quiet reflection, I would like you to take your sin or your name, your blood, and just place it up here in this altar. And then go back and sit down and continue to sing. So on here, write your name if that's what you need to do. Give your life to Jesus. Or maybe it's just something that's catching you up. But it's time to be real about this. And it's costly. It's a big deal. It's something we need to say, Jesus, I'm done. I'm sacrificing it. I'm giving it up on this altar. So you can just come up when they start singing. Take a moment. Pray about it if you need to. Write it down. And then come up here one at a time, however you want. And just throw it in here in the altar. And leave it there. Jesus, we thank you that your life was given in a beautiful exchange for ours. Help us not to forget this moment. Not because there's something extra spiritual about it, but because we recognize and put our sin in the altar. We realize that you died for it. All of it, once and for all. May our lives be changed, and may we live differently. May we be infected by what sin has cost you. In Jesus' name, amen.